Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical anti-capitalist approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 83rd episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. I'm so excited today to share with you a juicy and in-depth conversation with the amazing astrologer and hypnotist, Taylor Ursula of That's So Pisces. It was an honor to get to collaborate with Taylor, not only for this podcast episode, but to have them offer a guided meditation and hypnosis in my recent class, Rising Above the Wound, Shadow Work and Collective Healing during the US Pluto Return. So Rising Above the Wound is now available as a self-paced course on Teachable. It's available as of today, December 20th, until February 20th, which is 2 days before the first exact moment of the United States Pluto return. Funnily enough, that is 2/22/2022 when we have our first moment of the Pluto return. So you can go, I'll have a link in show notes if you're interested in registering for the course that we collaborated on. And if you would like to, I have a discount code specifically for podcast listeners, because I love y'all. You can use the code PLUTORISING at checkout and you'll get 10% off either the full price or the payment plan. So I'm really excited. Rising Above the Wound, it was amazing to teach this class. Thank you so much to everybody that signed up. If you missed it, you have a now 2 month window to sign up again. But again, that early bird discount is just for early enrollment, quote unquote, which I'm calling it, which is through December 31st. So sign up before December 31st and you'll get 10% off. And this is a class that if you hadn't listened to my episode already, Rising Above the Wound, my story about my fascination with Pluto and my work with Pluto, this is a class that goes over in depth what the United States Pluto return is, Pluto through the houses, a lecture on celebrity case studies and how those show up as Pluto placement archetypes, inner child healing work, herbs for boundaries, psychic protection, spiritual hygiene, tarot cards for doing shadow work, and then the final module, it's a 4-module class, is about healing the Plutonian wound and rising above the wound through accountability, community care, transformative justice. Because we really see Pluto in a lot of languages like the planet of sadism, the planet of warfare. But when we move beyond that, when we evolve Pluto, we see a new, better, stronger world. We see the destruction of systems of oppression and the accountability and the amends made by all harm doers. So I hope to see you in the class. I'm really excited about it. Again, it's going to be open until about February 20th. So until the United States Pluto return is exact. So please sign up. And if you love this conversation, which I know that you will, go ahead and check out Taylor Ursula's work. You can book a reading with them. And if you enjoy this podcast, a reminder that you can support for as low as $2 per month on Patreon. And for a $5 pledge, you get a lot of extra content, including a monthly full moon collective reading. So if you like this podcast, it is like another hour each month of me talking about the astrology and the tarot of the full moon and doing the collective reading. And I usually publish a e-zine about every 2 months at this point, Flower Essence Case Studies. And we definitely need your support to keep the podcast sustainable, keep it as a paid gig for our guests. So if that's in your means, I would appreciate it so much. Check it out, www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. Sending everybody so much love. I want to get right into this conversation. The whole video of the conversation is actually on Patreon for subscribers of $5 or more. It was a 90-minute conversation, and I cut it down to about an hour, and that was really hard because, like I said, this conversation was amazing and juicy, and I love talking to Taylor, and I hope you check out their work. So, again, check out the Patreon for the full conversation on video. And yeah, thanks for being here, y'all. Happy New Year. I'm here today with the amazing astrologer, Taylor Ursula of That's So Pisces. Hi, Taylor. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very honored to be here. I have been following your work for some time and gleefully indulging in your tinctures. So it's very awesome to be here.
Someone actually like recommended that I interview you like years ago. And that's how I found your work. Someone was like, you should interview Taylor Ursula from That's So Pisces. It's like, oh, I'll check out their work. So yay, like a couple years later, here we are. And we are currently collaborating on my class, Rising Above the Wound, Shadow Work and Collective Healing during the US Pluto return. You're doing a Plutonian meditation. I felt like you would be a really good person to do that. So I'm really excited. And yeah, I was hoping that we could just start today for you talking a little about your work to folks that maybe, and about who you are, just to folks who might not be familiar with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, I am Taylor Ursula. I am an astrologer and a practicing hypnotist. I am also currently in graduate school to become an LMFT. So I'm very much focused on being a helpful resource in this time. So I love astrology, and I came to it when I was approaching my Saturn return. As many Saturn returns pull us into a focus. I had been working in social media before that for a long time and found it very distressing. And I had also been working in publishing in the art book world and also found that a bit distressing. A lot of environments are not doing great right now. So I just found myself sort of pulling inward and wondering what I was experiencing. And I realized that it was a 12th house Saturn return. And once I had language for that particular experience, I was in. I was like, I need to know this language. This language understands me. This language is helping me. And wow, look at this. This language can also help other people. So it was really Saturn who pulled me into that place. And I've been in here ever since. From there, I have explored Reiki. And I am now certified in hypnosis, which is one of my favorite tools available to humans. So I really love working with people, helping people through this evolving world, helping people tune into who they really are outside of the conditioning we've received in our environments, and really catalyze some of the change that is necessary for what we're moving through right now. So, yeah.
I love that. I can't wait to get into more of this with you. We've been talking a lot, and we both have third house stelliums. So placements for people that talk a lot. I think, and it's interesting too, like your work around Neptune and Chiron, and it's interesting hearing about you being catalyzed towards astrology during your Saturn return. I always said that I got into tarot during my Saturn return, but that was back before I knew exactly when a Saturn return was. It was actually when Pluto conjuncted my sun that I started experiencing like a lot of deep self-reflection and deep healing and introspection that led me to like become a tarot reader.
And that's interesting that you talk about 12th house Saturn returns, because I know that's a tough one, because with a 12th house Saturn return, not only do you have to go through that 12th house Saturn, but then right after Saturn returns over, you have to go through the conjunct ascendant and then the first house. So it feels like to me, I've always thought of people with 12th house Saturn, and I have a first house Saturn conjunct the ascendant. So, you know, and I'm a Cap Moon Sun. So I'm very familiar with the restraints and the shame spirals of Saturn, like very much so. So I'm curious, like, what that was like for you, your Saturn return, and then like the subsequent years, and how working with astrology during that time like help you see yourself and others in more enlightened ways.
Yeah, you said it. When the 12th house Saturn returns, it then hits your first house, and it is a time. It absolutely is is a humbling time, and that experience was really bleak, especially considering that Saturn was in my first house as quarantine was unfolding, and as the South Node was there too. So it was kind of this very deep purge of self. And I really felt it personally in terms of like the way that I have shown up for the system. Like for a long time, like I was like, my own life doesn't matter. It's in shambles, but I have a job and I'm going to show up to that job. And like, I'm going to be that dependable person. I'm going to give my all. Like, I'm going to give more than I have to this tangible structure. And really feeling myself knowing how wrong that was, but not knowing yet that the world was going to shut down and like prove that. And so it was a very strange, depressing time of I had just finished being certified for hypnosis as well. So I was like, great, I'm gonna come out with like, here I am, I'm gonna do these things. And it was like, no one's going anywhere. So it's a very it feels like a loss of self for sure, having that Saturn come through that first house space and just sort of slice away things that can't be. It can feel very disheartening because you feel like you had a vision for something, especially since my natal Saturn is in Sag. It's like up there, just like, oh, things, like, look at all these things. And then it's like, this isn't going to be real. This isn't going to be real. This one's not going to be real. That can't be real. You're like, okay.
Are you
All
a
right.
Capricorn rising?
I am, yeah.
Okay. So not only that, like your Saturn return was like your rule. Yeah, that happened to your ruling planet. So that, yeah, that's a lot.
It was a
And
little
you,
crazy.
yeah, but it seems like you're, that makes sense that you're a Capricorn rising. You've got just all the things that you're doing, all your different skill sets. And you are, it seems like a lot of your work, you're really focused on inner child work and Chiron, which I think is so important. That is a thing that I feel like there was this big shift during quarantine. Like we are in this really formidable time for humanity. We have been, and yet it's, and this is, I'll try not to talk about my special interest of Pluto too much, but that is what I love about Pluto, but also Neptune and the outer planets, is it's this wide scope that's so big that when you're in it, you can't see it until you have perspective. You're like so close in it that you can't see. And that's really what I believe about the times that we're in is just, and like for me, taking my first astrology class in 2016 and learning about the US Pluto return and about the Pluto Saturn conjunction in 2020, and just being like, okay, 2020 is going to be a really fucked up year. Like we got to prepare for it. And then it really delivered in that way, it really delivered in that way. So I think it's interesting with these outer planets to think about when you're in it, you can't see it. And I think a lot about that with our own unconscious habits, the and why inner child work is so important, because that was us before the world like hurt us, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do love that you brought up, Pluto kind of activating for you, your tarot journey. I feel like Pluto also did set me up for my Saturn return because Pluto did cross my ascendant, kind of right before those moments, the year or two leading up to that. And that was definitely a moment of like, I have been lied to. I'm like, I'm playing a game that I don't like. And so I think it's, I think you're right. It's very interesting to see how these outer planets affect us. And we don't, unless we have, you know, some sort of personal transit, some sort of like aspect happen in real time. And then we have to have the, I don't know, we have to have the evolved mindset to even be able to place those things, because we're talking about generational impacts and how we live them, how we embody them. And that is not, I don't know, that requires a level of self-awareness that that can be tricky. That can be really tricky. And not everyone has transits from these outer planets. Some people's charts are set up to experience the outer planets in their first houses that other people will never have, right? So it is a really interesting thing to see how we all kind of handle these larger influences. Because as you were saying earlier, I like that you described Pluto as a river, and you can kind of go either way. And it's like, you can see what's, you can feel what's happening, maybe not see what's happening, but feel what's happening and say, oh, I feel this. This is telling me something. I need to look into this. Or we can feel something and not know how to integrate it, and instead make it someone else's problem.
Yeah, project it out.
Yes. Definitely. Absolutely.
The projection is a big Plutonian thing. As it is a Saturnian thing, I think to some degree, like there's a lot of commonalities, like Saturn can that shame, you know, because also like the shame spiral, like many of us deal with shame, and how we utilize our shame is another thing, you know. So Speaking of that, I would love to kind of hear about your work on Chiron, and do you have do you talk about Chiron on the IC specifically?
So I that's a good question. The Chiron part kind of came after the exploration of the IC began. And it started from, well, let's see, the inner child stuff certainly blew up this year, I feel, especially since, you know, we're talking about here in the States, like these, I kind of keep glancing over at the America chart. That's why my eyes are doing that. But yeah, we're coming at this time where we're in these very thick, deep transits. And so one of those is that Chiron is back in Aries, which is America's natal Chiron placement. And so it does feel very potent that this year, a lot of people have been looking to heal inner child entities or inner child energies. And same with me, I have an Aries IC and I have no planets in Aries. My North Node is also there and my Mars ruling is in detriment. So I had a lot of trouble understanding why I was such an angry person when I had so many Pisces and like pacified planets. I was like, what is happening that there's lava in my body all the time? Oh, it's that there's fire on my IC. Interesting. And so that exploration came for me personally as I moved this year into like a safe home where I could start unpacking some of my very deeply buried IC feelings. And so we did the first Exploring the IC class and talked kind of specifically about the IC and the planets around it. And my Chiron happens to be, let's see, is it sextile my North Node? Yeah. So it kind of grew organically from that original conversation. And from that first one, we were like, well, then yeah, let's absolutely talk about Chiron and let's look at where Chiron fits in with the IC as well. Is there a relationship? Is there not a relationship? That is a relationship in itself. If there's no relationship between Chiron and the IC, then that tells us a story also. So it really unfolded quite organically as I was going through my own questions of like, who am I and what am I allowed to have in this life? And why don't I feel safe? And that can feel very Chiron and Aries, which again, knowing that this is in America's chart, it's it makes sense that as a country, we are experiencing this collective crisis of why can't I be me? Why don't I feel safe? Why is this happening? And so I think it is a really interesting exploration to look at. Chiron in general, but especially how it plays a role with the IC, since both of them pertain to early times before we have real consciousness or agency. And so being adults now and deciding to, you know, as we're kind of, we keep coming back to this Pluto notion of like, can I overcome this? Can I transform this? I think there's a lot of people right now who are feeling this and really want to try to feel differently, really want to try to understand, really want to try to get to the root of things, which is why astrology is so beautiful too. Because we can, look at stories. And I think stories are so important because we connect with them. If we connect with a story, then we can understand what the ending is and we can decide what we want to change about the ending. I've been seeing that phrase like from since the beginning of the year. I've been seeing it a lot. So I know that I'm not the only person who is really in this place right now. I think it's Pluto related too, since we're trying to not pass on the trauma, right? Like I think for us with Pluto and Scorpio, we're very much like, this has to end with us. Like this has to. Yeah. And so it makes sense that there's this really big push right now to overcome these things, to say like, we have the power to keep this going or to stop it. So.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes. There is something really special. And I, you know, one thing about, as I've been doing, I've been really feeling like this deep student of Plutonian shadow work since I learned about Pluto 5 years ago. And yet there's something about, and I'm like, of course, I'm turning it back to Pluto, but I want to talk about Chiron also. There's something about the nature of Pluto that always makes you feel like you're not enough. And I've been questioning that because I've been wanting to teach this class for so long. And I was like, you don't know enough. But when I started putting it together, I was like, I don't know enough. Like, and I was, you know, doing, reading a lot of, and like watching a lot of lectures from Jeff Wolf Green. Don't know if you're familiar with him, evolutionary astrologer, really focused on Pluto and his work. And he talks about like the Pluto and Leo generation of being these baby boomers and the way that like the Pluto generational sign can show the arc of your life and what your values are. So we saw with the baby boomers, they started out with like anti-war and being like peace and love and like no Vietnam. And then suddenly Reaganomics came along 10 years later and they were like, wait, we can be rich? Never mind. Screw all that. And they became the yuppies, you know, and now they're in this time and there's like the okay boomer thing and like baby boomers are so defensive. And that's kind of a lot of people are like, you know, they're like, oh, well, baby boomers are kind of the, you know, that Pluto and Leo, it's kind of narcissistic. It's like kind of like all, like there's this idea, which I've told you this before. Like, I think the idea of narcissism is super trendy right now and like really, really overused. But then there's this kind of mentality in the Pluto and Leo generation of narcissism of like, oh, we, our generation like fought against war and like had the civil rights movement. So like, yeah, we're allowed to have like suburban homes and like vote Republican in our 60s or whatever. And I think like, it's interesting because like what I was just saying about like how these outer planets, the arc is so big that like you're just, and that's why I think of a river. It's such, when you go swim in a river, you're not seeing that whole river. You're just in that one spot that the water moves through. Mm-hmm. And I think about that with the Pluto and Scorpio. I'm part of the Pluto and Libra generation. So like I'm
that tail end.
Yes. Right? I'm an elder millennial, zennial. The elder millennials, we are Pluto and Libra. You know, my Pluto is at 22 degrees Libra. So I've been in the square, you know, coming out of the square, it hit me a little bit earlier than a lot of other people. And then I've had Pluto on my IC on my south node as well, because I have a north node in the south. So I've had Pluto on my IC, which I learned.
Casual.
That was when Watergate happened for Nixon. Pluto. So that's a big time of like, yeah, karmic lessons, which makes sense. You know, the thing about it with Pluto and Scorpio, I'm super fascinated with Pluto and Scorpio. I think, you know, the millennial generation thinking about this, there's this kind of like contention between baby boomers and millennials and like Gen X is like, whatever, I'm a nihilist, you know? But then I also think things like, and I'm really going off here, I think things like the fact that like you know, for the Pluto class, one of these, I use celebrity examples for the Pluto class, and one of them is Whitney Houston. Pluto in the seventh house, Whitney Houston, many people did not know, had like the love of her life was her female best friend. And she was in a very conservative community. And in the 80s, it was absolutely unacceptable for her to come out, like married like a super toxic guy. Thinking about that, or thinking about like what Whitney Houston went through, and like, would that happen now? And is this because of Pluto and Scorpio being like, no, gender variance, like queerness, like sexual, non-monogamy, polyam, you know, like all these things.
No, absolutely. That's an incredible distinction to make. It's not, you know, we're talking about just sign to sign, but those experiences being so different. And that's a very good question. I think that too, about like the technology that we have today. I'm like, what would life be if we had grown up with these things? And it is, it's very American of us to want to blame each other.
Right.
For what's happening, rather than actually talk about what's happening and try to solve it. And when you said that, I came back to Neptune. I thought about Neptune again. And for those of us with Pluto in Scorpio, we also likely have that in some relationship to Neptune in the early degrees of Capricorn. And so that may be part of that insistence upon removing the veil, that sense of like, no, this can't go on. Although it is interesting, I'm looking at this chart and Neptune is trine Pluto in America's natal chart, which I think is pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. And thinking about Pluto being in the second house for America in the whole sign chart really drove home the point that you made of not enough. I don't have enough. I don't make enough. I don't have enough.
Yep.
Whatever it is I have, I need more. That felt very, I was like so lit. I just looked at it and I was like, wow, that seems like the American dream.
Yes.
But yes, that feeling of not being enough, that's really interesting. And that makes sense as to why perhaps Pluto issues seem to be the most troublesome or the most overwhelming to overcome. So there is limitation in that sense, but it's kind of more us and the tangible world and the resources that we have. But Pluto is much more the psychological enough. I'm never going to be enough. I'm not going to have enough, or I don't know, that sensation of threat perhaps. And maybe that's why we're talking about Pluto and why it's so important to dig into this, and why even, you know, every step of putting this together has been a question of like, is this too far? Like, what am I bringing up? And like, is this going to be okay? But that is what Pluto asks, I believe.
Yes.
And it is up to us to kind of figure out what enough is, perhaps, and what we can be even if we're not enough. But that's just the surface. That's like one surface level of talking about Pluto.
You know, that is fascinating. I love this conversation, because now I'm thinking, like, is that a wound of the Pluto and Scorpio generation? Is that not enoughness, that like void, you know, is the void a part of, because Pluto is the void, but it's like how you fill the void that defines, I don't want to say it defines you, how you fill the void, but it defines how you deal with pain and suffering, you know, because that's, yes. You know, and I talk about this I feel like I bring this up all the time, is that I hate the quote, like, I really hate the quote, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, because that's not true. Like, yeah, like look at any violent person, serial killer, did they like go through great things in their young life? No, they did not. They all had like absolutely horrific childhoods. So what is, and then, you know, I was unpacking that more and I was like, well, what does make you stronger mean? Like, you know, Pluto's like, go take your power back by becoming the one that hurts, you know, because I think like, and I've explored this a lot, just really gone down that like thought river of like, so what is reclaiming power? Because to me, reclaiming power is healing. I think for me, the biggest lesson I learned from Pluto was that being spiteful or wanting revenge, even against someone that really did serious harm, is only a mirror that will bring it back to us. Yes. And like that Pluto to me is the evolved Pluto is the liberation away from like wanting revenge or having spite. But really a lot of people that like go out into the world and hurt and cause harm, they are, you know, and I don't know, but from like all of my weird special interest research on this topic, I feel that it is a way of trying to regain power. I mean, that's what a God complex is in psychology. You know, it's trying to regain power because you feel that you have none. And Pluto is like power dynamics and control. Yeah, that does it. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the Pluto and Scorpio generate. I mean, the Pluto and Scorpio generation is now sort of the drivers of society. So that's interesting. And I don't have a lot of feelings about the Pluto and Libra generation. I feel like it's kind of boring. I do think Pluto, I switched to Chiron, and because yeah. I really want to hear your thoughts on generational Chiron placements, because I have Chiron and Taurus, which is the zennial kind of, it's late, it's like the last part of the Gen X and then elder millennials. Mm-hmm. And I think of Chiron and Taurus as the not, I actually do think that's the not enough generation. The like, sure. You know, because I think like the zennial generation, like elder millennials and late Gen Xers were growing up in a world where we thought that it was going to be like how it was for the baby boomers, that yes. middle class life was going to be like really accessible. And then Chiron and Taurus grew up with that expectation in childhood. Well, I mean, and I'm being very like, you know, white, I will say like white, middle class work, you know, for the most part, people that, you know, were raised in a family structure where it was expected that you'd be able to get like a blue collar or like a white collar, like middle class job upon graduating from college and like have no debt by age 30, you know, that kind of like assumption, I think still existed for Chiron and Taurus. And then, so like, that's what I think of a lot of. With that. Yeah. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on like generations of Chiron.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me, because that feels kind of like that first, y'all were like the first ones to reach that stepping stone and realize that like it wasn't real. And I think that is certainly connected to some of the Neptune and Capricorn, the larger like structural lies that we were taught about, especially since for the US, Neptune is in Virgo. So it's very much like, just work hard, just like keep doing it, just like keep going. And then you'll have the dream. It's gonna be great. And so I feel like that Taurus Chiron for y'all, just being just a little bit older than me, and us Pluto and Scorpios, was kind of that first moment of like, wait a minute, y'all said this, and then it's not, I'm stepping on, and then it's like that, I'm stepping on the land and it's not firm. Like I'm like this Taurus, you said this was the tradition, was that I was gonna do these things and then just step into this role and it's not here for me. And I think, yeah, that's really interesting to hear your perspective of it. What I have found interesting in looking into Chiron and Taurus, and I think maybe this will be very fitting for you too. Chiron and the earth signs is especially interesting. What I found there was that people with Chiron and Taurus may be dealing with witnessing land abuse and like witnessing how we've taken advantage of the earth. And that's certainly true for, say, Chiron and Cancer or Chiron in the fourth house in terms of like home. And seeing my disconnection from my homeland, being evicted from my homeland being war torn. But in Taurus particularly, it's our first relationship to earth and to resource. And so it makes a lot of sense to hear you say that would be perhaps that moment of like not enoughness, or that realization of not enoughness, because from Taurus is where we build everything else. Like if I don't have enough here, then how am I supposed to make it into these other earth houses to be witnessing growth? Or how am I supposed to even implement routine in Virgo if I don't have the resources I need here in Taurus? I like thinking about the land part as well for you as an herbalist, and for, you know, going through this course and talking to some of the people with Chiron and Virgo, for example, a lot of them were like, oh my God, I have goldenrod drying in the kitchen right now. And like, I am rebuilding a relationship to herbs and to earth and to, you know, for the resources that I cannot afford with money, or that, you know, that I can't, that I've been priced out, or I'm returning to the earth to try to understand how to resource for myself. So yeah, that Chiron, especially in an earth sign or in an earth house, really does kind of set the tone for other, how else we can manage the tangible realm.
I love that. Can you speak a little about what your Chiron placement is and sure. like how you feel about your Chiron generation?
Absolutely. I have Chiron in Gemini, and for me in Placidus, it's in the fifth house, and in whole sign, it's in the sixth, and both I have found to be very true. But in Gemini, I have found that this really speaks to the early 90s generation that I grew up in. I was born in 87. And so in the early 90s, everyone was put on Ritalin. Everyone was put on ADD medication. Every child had ADD. I was one of the few who was not taken in to be medicated. My legal dad is a psychiatrist, and he also thinks I'm a genius. So that's another problem. Pluto and Leo on the ascendant. like, my child is genius and you're going to do X, Y, and Z. But he said, you know, I want you to develop your mind. I want you to be yourself. And so I'm not going to do that. So the largest collective experience I have found with Chiron and Gemini, it kind of hinges upon this particular phenomenon. Were you prescribed on ADHD or ADD medication as a child, and now you're trying to relearn your mind on your own outside of this medication? Or did someone miss that you had neurodivergence? Me. Did someone miss that? This is also the time of like gifted children everywhere, the gifted generation. So were you missed? Did someone overlook that you had neurodivergence, or that you needed different learning environments or tools? And now you're coming to terms with trying to understand your mind. So there's a lot about mentality that I think many of us growing up now are learning to have conversations about, especially since Chiron and Gemini is a lot about, we don't know how to talk about this stuff. I have found a lot of people who felt like important conversations were not had in the home. Depending on where that is in your chart, you know? So we don't know how to talk about grief. We don't know how to express negative emotions. I feel like a lot of Chiron and Gemini may be reflected in this whole like high vibes only, or like no bad vibes, where it's like, oh, you weren't allowed to express your varying emotions perhaps as a child, simply to have feelings, to know what they feel like, because Gemini is not locked in place, right? It's simply just the exploration of like, what's this idea? So I think for a lot of us, there's a big exploration of what is my mind? I am probably neurodivergent in some way. Let me explore what that looks like. For me in particular, like I was just diagnosed with ADHD this year and I'm 34. And I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to not beat myself up over these things in the past, but you know what? It is cool to know that this is something to know about me moving forward. And now I can build this into who I am and what I do. So I think a lot of the Chiron and Gemini generation is reprogramming. Reprogramming is probably the word. There's a lot of recalibration in terms of maybe being told that what we thought was wrong, or being told that everything we thought was amazing. That's also, that's another side of that spectrum, is back to that gifted generation idea of like, what if I'm just a person? What if I'm just a person and I'm not going to write the next Star Wars, or like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of inflated sense of self that people need to work out for themselves outside of whomever taught them they were supposed to be the end all be all. And many of those things may overlap. Absolutely. There may be, you know, I feel like I don't know enough. Back to that feeling of enough. You said the word enough, and that feels very Chiron. Yeah. So I don't know enough. I don't think smartly enough. Everyone is better at figuring this out than I am. Which feels really true. Like I told you earlier, like I just figured out how to make slides. And like now everyone's putting captions over slides and I'm like, I'll be there soon. I'll catch up. I'm going to take a nap first. But yeah, so I think that there's so much happening now in terms of advocating for mental health, for neurodivergence, for different learning environments and styles, especially since we have the North Node in Gemini right now. So I see a lot of people coming to terms with the North Node in Gemini, moving over this Chiron with this phenomenon. Oh, I've been belittling my own mind. Oh, I punish myself because I don't think right. Oh, I haven't created a structure to hold space for my mind the way that it needs to be held. So I hope that that means that many of us are rewriting those stories for ourselves.
Amazing. I love that. Wow. So much of just, yeah, I feel like you and we were just saying, I was like, we both have third house stelliums. I feel like I've talked to you for like 37 hours straight.
Yes.
You'll like say something and I'll be like, that triggers, like a light bulb goes off in this. So when you were, yeah, definitely. That's so interesting about Chiron and Gemini. I mean, there's so much that you said. I was thinking like the Indigo Children thing, like reminded me of the Chiron and Gemini. Remember when Indigo Children, or like being a gifted child, which was when I was a kid, it was all the kids that had families that were like really like stable and like middle, like upper class and, you know, like conventional at everything. Those were the kids that got into get the GATE program. Like I did not get into that. I was way too hyperactive and taught myself and like didn't understand time. That is interesting to think about, like in quarantine, how many so many people have come out as queer, come out as non-binary, and come out as neurodivergent, dealt with their mental health, you know, finally named their mental health issues. And to the point where I've heard some people be like, oh, it's just trendy now. And I'm like, okay, maybe, and maybe it is a thing. And what you're saying about, you know, telling your kids they're special, there is, again, baby boomers, I've seen the baby boomer Pluto and Leos are like, millennials are the narcissists because everyone told them they were super special and then they got older and they don't want to work for $12 an hour or whatever. But it's like, I haven't completely like unpacked that or developed an opinion around it. I think, again, there's like a lot of pathological language that gets thrown around really nonchalantly that can be harmful. But I also think, I don't think there's anything wrong with telling someone they're special. Right. As long as you don't make it like you don't make it like you're special and everybody else sucks. But I wanted to ask you also, because you said Neptune's on your ascendant and you call yourself not so Pisces, or your business not so Pisces. And, you know, you talking about the Neptune and Capricorn generation, again, I haven't studied the generations of Neptune. So I'd love to hear any of your thoughts about, you know, Neptune in through the generations and like having Neptune on your ascendant.
Sure. I will say that I am currently doing my Neptune through the generations research. I would like to talk about just the phenomenon of Neptune as a workshop on its own. And so my experience is largely through seeing how people of our generation interact with Neptune and Capricorn in their charts in different places. And I certainly have given a lot of thought to Neptune being in Virgo since we are, or in America's chart, since we are leading up to, as we keep coming back to, these larger transits. So the Pluto return is happening at the same time, or rather, let me say, the Neptune opposition is happening as a lead up to the Pluto return, which is happening as a lead up to the Chiron return. So, which is fine because Chiron returns every 50 years. So like that's, you know, that's old hat. But to be introduced by Pluto is new. So Neptune is absolutely such a mysterious entity, and moves so slowly, which is part of why Not a lot of us have necessarily looked into Neptune through the generations because it takes so long to get through one. But what I am finding that I think is interesting and also was cool because it fed into this from my Chiron research. There we go. In reading about Neptune, it's very interesting to read about how Poseidon didn't actually want to rule the ocean. Poseidon wanted to rule land. And so it's interesting to me that Poseidon is in detriment in earth signs and is exalted or at home in water signs. And yet for us on earth, we experience it in detriment. And so when Poseidon would be angry, he would just create storms and throw them at earth to sort of force people to respond because everyone would be on earth and just doing their earthly thing and just hanging out and having fun. And Poseidon would be like, I'm over here bitter. How dare you? Mm-hmm. The only way to get your attention is to create a physical storm. And so thinking about that regarding Neptune, thinking about Neptune for many of us being in Capricorn, I've really had to, it's difficult to unpack Neptune. So that's probably why it's helpful that I have it on my ascendant because I've lived enough to be like, what is happening? Oh, it me. Okay. So Neptune I have found represents a few things. And one word I've used that people have been excited about is gaslighting. I find that Neptune can be where gaslighting occurs. And I have found that many people find that particular word very liberating for them when we talk about Neptune. And I think that especially since Neptune is in America's, in Placidus in the ninth house, which is so much about like, here's our message to the rest of the world, work hard and come here, work hard and you can have a life. Which is like the original gaslighting. Like it's the original, like, no, just keep working harder. No, you're not working hard enough. We're not doing it. You're not doing it right. Well, you just have to know these things. You just have to do it this way. Just keep at it. Just keep practicing. And so that's kind of where I started picking up on that gaslighting idea, is where we, it's this collective experience of something we want to believe, perhaps something we desire to have faith in. And yet in different signs, that looks like very different things. So for us in Capricorn, that feels very connected to, again, kind of what I hinted at before when we were talking about Chiron and Taurus being the first step to the sort of larger realization of Neptune and Capricorn of like, oh, so they told us that we would go through this system, we would do all of these things, we would climb this ladder, and that we would just get the entry-level job, and then we would just keep logging in the hours and just do the Capricorn thing. Just keep showing up, be responsible, take charge of your life, and you're going to be something just like we were. So that had me laughing when you were talking about the Pluto and Leo generation of like, you can't be mad at us. Like we do. And it's like, you're the ones who told us all of this was going to be what it is. And it's not, you guys told us this. So what happened? So it's a fascinating thing to have Neptune on the ascendant because I feel, similar to what you said about Pluto and projection, I feel like Neptune is kind of where we want to mirror back to other people. If you want to believe in this, then I want to help you believe in this, especially in a sign like Capricorn, where it's like, I can show you physically, I'm going to do this gesture for you, or I'm going to like perform this labor for you to show you what you want to see. You envision a world and I will make it come true. Neptune is it's such a confusing, nebulous energy. I find that I encounter people having Neptune on my ascendant who see what they want to see. And so I will kind of encounter people who I want to help because I feel like I'm a very helpful. That's my gesture. Let me show up and help. Often I will reach a point where I realize that someone had a vision of me that didn't actually exist. And that feels connected to Neptune. And it's sometimes my fault because I want to be that for them. And so Neptune can be, again, this, I want to mirror back to you what it is that you see. At the same time, I feel like if I mirror back to you, you get something and I don't. That's something very interesting. If I am sort of the face that you're projecting images onto, then you've had an experience, but I haven't. I haven't had an experience. I've just been a vessel or a vehicle for the projection. So I think Neptune in Capricorn is certainly us unraveling, or at least talking about the fact that the systems exist don't serve. So whether that's us unraveling, whether it's that Neptune is just dissolving those structures on its own, both, of course, but Neptune ultimately wants to connect us to some sort of higher purpose, to some sort of faith, to some sort of beyondness. We are people who want to know that what we're doing adds up to something, and that at the end of our lives, we will be regarded by the universe as good, or as contributing, or as some beneficial contribution that allows us to, maybe, you know, graduate as spirits or something. And so I think ultimately we all need to have faith in something. We need to believe in something, even if it doesn't make tangible sense. And that is Neptune. I need to believe in something that is not physically in front of me. I need to know that I'm connected to something that's bigger than me, and that I can't see everything that exists. So how that manifests is absolutely gonna depend on kind of what planets are interacting with that Neptune. And again, you know, I said that people have projected onto me, but I've absolutely allowed it. That has been my sense of sacrifice. Neptune can make us feel like whatever this causes, I must give myself to it. And so if I'm being projected upon, then where am I letting that happen? And we may not see that, because Neptune, again, makes us feel sacrificing. And so we can martyr. We can say, no, but I had no choice. I had to. So it's a very confounding energy that I'm really excited to read more about. And I actually just learned on Twitter that Saturn and Neptune are going to conjoin at 0 degrees of Aries as Neptune's finally making it through the end of Pisces through 2025, Saturn will catch up and sort of retrograde through that space. And then they'll meet at 0 degrees of Aries, which I think will be very interesting. Because what is Neptune in Aries? Like, that's just going to be, that's my next, that's what I need to read about next.
Fine. I can't wait for your Neptune class. I'm like, whoa. You know, and the other thing is, when I was putting together the Pluto class, I compiled, like, you know, because the outer planets don't have when two outer planets come to a aspect, they're going to stay there for a long time. For example, Neptune sextile Pluto, which happens between 1950 to 2032. That aspect exists for everyone. So because I told my students, I was like, nobody better come out of here being like, oh my God, I have Pluto and Scorpio sextile Neptune. Yes, you and everyone between 1984 and 1995 have that. But I was reading about it because I was like, well, what is this like long sextile that happens over nearly 100 years? And there's a lot of theory around it that this is the collective consciousness upgrading, you know, and that this is the time when we are moving towards like the age of Aquarius, you know, this idea of the age of Aquarius, that this is the super conscious, if we look at it in like Jungian psychology, you know, that this is the time. So I'm wondering if you have you studied that transit at all, or have you thought about that before?
That's super cool. That makes a lot of sense that those two planets have been in sextile this whole time. You just blew my mind. Well, that makes so much sense. Oh my gosh. What you said triggered that I have looked up out of curiosity when Pluto and Uranus would be in conversation. And that's not happening until, interestingly enough, Uranus is back in Gemini for America's Uranus return. And Pluto is in Aquarius.
When is that?
So that's, oh my gosh, what is that? Is that 2026, 2027?
Really? Uranus in Gemini? Wait, oh no, it's in Taurus.
Yeah, because it's in Taurus right now. It's almost halfway through Taurus. So we only have about 3 to 4 more years of Uranus in Taurus. So it, yeah, it's, so we're going to have the Pluto Uranus trine in air signs, which as now that you have said that, that makes perfect sense, because for Pluto to then finally connect with Uranus in these air signs, Pluto from Aquarius, Uranus having just entered Gemini, that does seem like a very tangible, potent download, right? Like Uranus to Pluto across air signs, giving us words and language perhaps to start talking about what it is this long sextile is bringing us to unfold. Wow, that's fascinating. That's crazy.
Wow.
I had no idea. Thank you for teaching me that. That's so cool.
Yeah. So speaking of all of this, and you know, like Uranus and Taurus is like a really interesting thing to think about, even though, yeah, we've been in it for a bit. And this idea of like back to, you know, like land back movements, also like a big push, especially I think during COVID. I mean, I've seen so many queer land projects start up, you know, like you're, and then like also, I use Bill Gates as one of my examples, Pluto in the second house conjunct Jupiter, buying up like thousands of acres of farmland, the stock market, Wall Street, buying up tons of real estate, Airbnb becoming like a horrible dystopian nightmare for anyone that doesn't own a home in California or isn't a millionaire. With all of this happening, and then we're looking at, you know, I would love to do a study on, I'm sure people have, about like the astrology around social media, and we're experiencing, you know, especially, I can't remember what transit when that ex-employee of Facebook, the whistleblower, came out and was like, Facebook's super fucked up and like Zuckerberg's a piece of shit, you know, like all this stuff that we know, like they like try to utilize like, you know, tactics of abusive people to keep people logged on to their platforms.
Right.
So as we're seeing that, like social media has been this like tool of connection and communication that a lot of people like thought was going to be under Uranus and Taurus, like a lot of the technology, like the communication and the technology. And I feel like, you know, we were talking about, there's been a major shift, you know, now it's like, you basically have to pay to promote anything on Instagram to get it seen. And or do meme dumps. Like I was like, the only way to get any likes on a post is to do a meme dump where you're just taking other people's work most of the time. And then there's been like so many fake accounts popping up, people trying to use other people's livelihoods to scam others. Like they're like this, you know, it's, and that's Pluto, like scam artists are very Plutonian, you know,
yes.
The fact that, someone was just posting on this message board about how there were people writing them like, hey, if you Venmo me $100, I'll get you your animal back. And like, they don't even have the animal. Like, and I'm just like, where, you know, that's what I think we've seen in late capitalism, in Pluto, in Capricorn, is just like how far people will go to get money. Like how far will you exploit other people's emotions to get money? And so I'm leading up to this question that's really about, you know, like, I have noticed this, that I think when we are in collectively difficult times, if we don't do that Plutonian work on ourselves, or like the Chiron inner child work, what we can do, and I've seen, you know, I see this, is like we can project it outwards and cause harm in our own communities, or like, you know, people can be manipulative and vindictive and like steal from each other. And really, like in these times, like we need each other. So that's why I'm like so focused on healing the Plutonian mood, because I'm like, we need to all heal whatever it is inside of us that wants to manipulate and control, because we don't have time for Five of Wands arguments and fighting, like when we are dealing with the collapse of a system. So anyway, this is all leading into a question that's about, you know, like theft on social media, security culture, you know, the availability of like data, you know, data, 5G, all of that. So that's my topic that I'm throwing.
Yes. Out. Oh my God. Okay. So just like you said, so something else I picked up probably on Twitter. This is what I hate about the internet, is I never remember where I see things. I have no idea where I've collected information. But I saw an interesting theory proposed about Pluto entering Aquarius and how it's going to signal a time when a lot of people who have a presence on social media are going to withdraw that presence because fans will turn into fanatics and people will start becoming very like obsessive about their idols or about like public figures. And I thought that was very appropriate as a prediction, considering everything that you've just outlined. And coming back to Pluto being in America's second house, thinking about the opposition to all of the planets that are combust the sun in Cancer in the eighth house in whole sign for America, and how that Pluto is also square America's Aries Chiron, and that Chiron's opposite Saturn in Libra. So we have a security issue as a country, as a culture. We are obsessed with privacy. And privacy, we've learned, is something that only money can buy, or that only knowing the right people can afford you. And when we talk about, you know, the people who have money, and we think like, oh, these are the people who are really making it. And then realizing like, no, the people whose faces we see are not the people in power who have things. Like, they're just the spokespeople. Like, Beyonce is not a person in power. Like, right. Beyonce has people behind Beyonce who are in power. Every person's face we see has like a board of like a chair of people who are behind them, who are actually in power, and we'll never see their faces. And that is the luxury of privacy. We don't know who has the actual wealth and who can distribute it. We're not supposed to. So yeah, everything you're saying is really frighteningly true. And I think it's so much connected to perhaps this culture. I mean, obviously hacking and scams are not strictly an American problem, but it is very much an American phenomenon right now. I remember at the beginning of quarantine, like someone in Russia hacked into my Spotify, like while I was on it, like I was like on it and I was like playing music and it was like, they were changing the song. And I was like, man, people are just at home and just like, don't have anything to do and like need things. People need things and they don't have things. This is not okay. Using social media. Actually, what you brought up when you talked about the transits of social media, I looked that up when I was doing my Saturn Uranus research for a Fresh Voices presentation I did last year. And Saturn and Uranus will conjoin at the end of the decade, which I think is what correlates with the Civil War cycle you talked about, because this set of squares is the closing squares. And we haven't had closing squares between Saturn and Uranus since FDR.
Oh, okay.
88 was the conjunction. Okay, so 88 was the conjunction at the very end of Sagittarius. And so we haven't had closing squares since FDR and the Green Deal. So this is why the new Green Deal, and this, also Uranus also was about to enter Taurus. So these closing squares, and at the end of the decade, they will conjoin again and start a new cycle. And it's likely to be quite violent in some way, or there's always a coup when Saturn and Uranus are involved. There's always... But so, for example, like what we've seen happening in Yemen or haven't seen happening in Yemen, that sort of there's usually some sort of like foreign to America. There is some coup happening that we may or may not know about. There's usually like nuclear reactive material happening when these squares happen, Earth versus technology. But back to Pluto. Pluto was in Sagittarius when social media was being born. And so it's interesting that the South Node is traveling through there at this time and really sort of bringing to the surface all of the problems that exist in this digital fantasy world. The theft and the forgery on Instagram, this tool that was designed to give us a platform to showcase ourselves, which is very Sagittarius. Like, here's my story. If I show you my narrative, then you will think I'm amazing and powerful. And my status is based upon how much I can show you about my life and how epic it looks. And now social media is this trap where we thought we were sharing ourselves, and now we are all business people on Instagram. We are all hustling on Instagram. We are all censoring ourselves on Instagram because we can't say words like capitalism or the man or burnout or anything that goes against anything that's counterculture. We have to censor ourselves if we want to be seen. We have to put our faces in the gram and say, this is for the algorithm. So you'll pay attention to me. So we've been had, yes. And it makes sense that we would turn on each other in this time, because we cannot turn on the people who did this to us. This is the classic, hierarchy structure of everything is,
yes,
we have blocked ourselves off. Mark Zuckerberg has bought however many acres of Hawaiian land so that he can have his little fortress, and so he can sue the natives of Hawaii, so he can have more land, so that he can have privacy. And we are all out here gutting each other because we don't have acres of land, because we don't have food on the table. So it's a really stressful digital manifestation of a very classic trope of take it out on each other because you can't get to us. And you're right, we need each other. We need each other now more than ever. And instead we are turning on each other and taking advantage of each other. That Venmo scam that you mentioned is so crazy, about like the pet, and like, if you return this pet, I'll like Venmo me and I'll return this. I'm holding your pet hostage.
Okay. But they didn't even have the pet.
This happens a lot on Instagram, and this happened to me recently, where like people are kind of like, send me your Cash App, like send me your Venmo. I'm gonna, you know, you're promoting an offering and I want to support you, so like send me your thing. And then someone sent a link to you that they're going to use to get into your Instagram, and then like take it over, which like happened to me last week. So it's crazy.
Wow.
And you know, I kind of walk into these things. I kind of let this, I chose to play, you know, I chose to engage, and that's my problem. But it is really distressing that a tool that's meant to bring us together and to allow us to communicate, that's ultimately supposed to be something that we can use to connect with each other and support each other, is now a space where people are allowed to hack each other, steal each other's profiles, create fake profiles, and we're being shown that there's really nothing that the powers that be would like to do anything to interfere. There's no agency for the very people who are the ones bringing in the income to these companies. And coming back to this square of like Chiron square Pluto, that sounds awful. That's an awful square. And thinking about this chart and whole sign, Chiron's in the fifth. So I thought I was supposed to be amazing. I thought that if just by being here, people would love me. Oh, wait, that's not true. Like, not everyone in America is a star. Not everyone in America is Shirley Temple. Okay, so now to get what I need, which Pluto in second, I don't ever have enough. I have to fight you for it. I have to break into your life. That I have to break into your eighth house to go take everything you have, because I don't feel like I'm enough. Or I was told that if I performed, I could be a star, and it's not coming through. No one wants to see what I'm making. And again, that Chiron is something that we all experience and that we culturally experience, that we feel like that sensation of not enough. And yet to know in some capacity, whether consciously, subconsciously, that we live in a world where there is so much more than enough. Like, there's physically more than enough for the people on this earth.
Yeah.
So we're being put through a psychological game. Coming back to your note about, you know, evolved Pluto. Yes, it certainly helps when you are the victim of this. Who is the victim, first of all? Like, who is really how can I be mad? Who can be mad? I mean, all of us can be mad, but also I can't be mad at someone for not having enough and not having an avenue to get enough. But that said, that certainly brings us back to Pluto and that sense of, how do I survive without enough? How do I psychologically wrap my mind around who I am and what I'm capable of, if I know that I live in an environment where I'm going to be reminded that there's not enough, or I'm going to be told there's not enough, or, and deep down, I know that's a lie. Deep down, I know that's a lie. Pluto entering Aquarius, all of us are going to hide. Like, we're all going to be like, you can't find me ever again. It's pretty devastating. It's devastating because it's a platform for community and it's how we find each other. And yet it is now becoming the most dangerous way to be tricked and had. And we're all being pushed off of these platforms to create our own or to, but that's, I don't know why this came into my mind, but it feels like the Tower of Babel where we're all just being scattered again. And it's like, but we just got here. Like, we just all finally got together.
Yeah.
And got to this place where we could have a voice and could share in our experiences. And you have found a way to capitalize it and hierarchize. Yep, that's the word. Create a hierarchy out of it and still make it the same type of class structure that we have socioeconomically.
Yes.
Where people who have followers have things and have power, and how do I take that? How do I get that? Because I don't have it on my own. So many things that just came out of my mouth. Yeah. I'm like, did I answer their question though?
Yeah, that and more. Okay. Yes, so much. And yeah,
nothing to do. I do just want to, I wanted to anchor that as absolutely a very tangible and probably difficult part of Neptune and Capricorn, is that we, especially since we were taught what we were supposed to be born into and like build up to, seeing that we have all these visions for the world and seeing this, especially now, where we're like, change is important. Will we see it? Like, are we gonna see it in our lifetime? Or nah. And there is that question. We don't know. There is absolutely some heaviness and some weight to Neptune that is so thick that you don't really know how to see through it. You're like, I'm in this and this is all I can see. It's like the moon in tarot, right? It's like, this is it. I can't see anything else. Mm. I just have to slow down. Just to slow down and figure out. So yeah, I think that's actually kind of beautiful to think about, like, okay, Neptune, I have to slow down. I have to just maybe come back to myself. And maybe that correlates to those depressive periods where nothing external is it. Nothing external is doing it. And it's all kind of within and traveling in there and spending time in the fog, But similar to Pluto, not surrendering to it, like not just getting lost in it and being like, oh, I didn't this vlog. Like,
wow. Okay. Well, how can folks, I'm sure like everyone wants to work with you now. How can they find out more about your work and how to get in touch with you and support you?
I am at That's So Pisces pretty much everywhere. I am That's So Pisces on Instagram, Twitter, as long as I still have control over them until someone comes through and tells me I stole everything from them and that now my Instagram belongs to them. I'm also at thatsopisces.com. I think that's it. I'm pretty sure that's all the places I exist currently. Yes.
Well, I'll have all of that in the show notes so people can check out your work. And yeah, like, you're doing this research about Chiron. I'm going to book an appointment with you soon because I want to hear your, I love just hearing different perspectives on my chart.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm excited. Well, thank you so much. And thanks for collaborating with me and nerding out with me about generational astrology and being on my podcast.
This has been such a blast. I feel like you and I could talk for 5 years. And nerding out with you has been so much fun. So
yay.
This collaboration, I feel like I like asked for it. I was like, Venus, bring me friends who want to work with me.
Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch
for a pledge of $5 or more per month gets you access to extra content and helps support the production of the show. And go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review. You can also check out the website for tarot readings and apothecary and other offerings. Thanks so much, y'all. See you next time.